League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
The ball is up. The tip is won by Atlanta. Over down to Bill Sand to tie it.
We had some bad breaks, obviously, you know, with the jump ball. A couple of their guys were out of bounds. With the jump ball for Kyrie in the corner, I'm sitting right next to the ref and asking for a timeout. And the explanation he gave me, I never heard before in my 14-year career. Never. So he told me that I'm not allowed to call timeout because he didn't know who had possession of the ball. And I was the one who entered the ball to Kyrie. And as soon as I seen Millsap ball trap Kyrie in the short corner, I looked at him and called timeout. Twice, at least twice, and he wasn't even paying me no attention. You know, take away from the fact that, you know, we still had a huge lead to start the fourth. You know, every play counts no matter what's going on.
How much is the fine for talking about the refs?
Is it like 50, 25?
Not worth it.
You know, we just gotta, you know, move on from here.
I can't remember a game with that type of a deficit that I've been a part of maybe my rookie season, but yeah, it was ugly.
So much joy, so proud of the way we worked all week. There's just a lot of different thoughts, little flashes of past moments. Everything that's happened in my career, good and bad and not so good and not so bad, all those things kind of came through. And obviously everything was very fast, very fast. And it was even difficult to like focus on it. It was a very special moment. Now I'm a major champion. It's great. It's amazing. It doesn't change anything in me. I'm still the same guy. I have a master's tournament now. Happiness in my life, it doesn't depend only on that.
10 seconds to go. Everybody cheering. Bo Bennett out the center, fires it. Jimmy Howard sticks it into the corner. Crowd making noise. Pile up in that right corner, and this game is over. And in the final game at Joe Louis Arena, the Detroit Red Wings defeat the New Jersey Devils 4-1.
You know, when I first came here, I was going to come for just a couple of years, and I ended up staying 15, 9 as the coach. I guess the memories are everything lasts so long here, you know. Nick Lidstrom and Steve Yzerman and the Ilitch family owning it for so long. My memory would be, obviously, the first cup. I think players that came to Detroit wanted to come here, and they wanted to stay, and there was this special feeling, especially being on such a great team. Well, I had a pretty busy itinerary, but I wasn't going to miss it. I only came up this morning, but I'm so happy I did.
Isaiah Guns, yes! Here it is. He's got it! He's got it! Jesse Phillips hits the three!
Your 2004 NBA champion Detroit Pistons.
And so welcome to the Palace of Auburn Hills.
The Palace of Auburn Hills was more than just bricks and beams. It was the heart and soul of the Detroit basketball community. It was the palace that kids like Chris Webber, Jalen Rose, and Steve Smith grew up loving and dreamed of playing in one day. The fans who filled the seats and the players who ran the court made everlasting memories for generations to come.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Yes, indeed. Welcome to the extravaganza right here. As the gentleman said, this is ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. What he did not tell you is that we are Toledo's sports leader now and always. Thanks for being there with us on a Monday. Appreciate you stopping by. We got a lot to talk about this afternoon. We have got a little bit of history made yesterday for the first time in 18 tries at Ye Olde Masters. How about Sergio Garcia getting his first green jacket? Do you remember that once upon a time there was a narrative that was being written that young phenom Tiger Woods was about to be replaced by a young phenom named Sergio Garcia, who brought so much energy and excitement to the game of golf, maybe even more so than Tiger Woods himself brought? as he pranced down the fairway to see over a ridge to see where his three wood had landed, jumping for joy like only a little kid can. He just cast the serious, somber gentleman's look of the great game, cast it aside in favor of youthful enthusiasm. You remember this, right? Yeah, he was going to take Tiger Woods apart. He was going to be the guy that chased Tiger. He was going to be the, you know, the rival. It was going to be Woods and Garcia and maybe somebody else to kind of be the new Nicklaus and Palmer and Watson and so on. Yeah, 18 years later, he won his first major. His first major. And while I'm not here to really truly bash on Sergio Garcia by pointing out that it took him this long at the age of 37 now to win that first major, I'm not going to bash him. I am going to point out, for the sake of the obvious, I'll be Captain Obvious from that insurance commercial. Isn't it an insurance commercial? Or is it a car rental commercial? I don't know. What is Captain Obvious on, you guys?
I want to say it was Hotels.com or something
like
that.
Maybe, yeah, maybe. There we go. It was a hotel commercial. Yeah. I knew it was something like that. Something having to do with travel. What did I say? I said insurance. That's not to do with travel. Then I said car rental.
That's
so, yeah,
close.
I knew it was something
car
like
rental
that.
Was close.
Anyway, I'm going to be Captain Obvious here and point out, to me, what this championship for Sergio Garcia really represents. It represents the greatness of Tiger Woods. And I know this is going to sound like, you know, oh God, here we go, another Tiger memorial. You know, and it is kind of a memorial every time you talk, you know, positively about Tiger Woods anymore, because the obvious is, you know, his career is very possibly over. It's dead. You have a memorial for somebody who's dead. And obviously Tiger Woods isn't, but his career probably is. You know how hard it had to be for him to miss the Masters? I mean, do you know how much pain his back had to be in? I mean, this guy has been fighting through surgeries and recoveries and rehabilitations for so long, there is nothing that would keep him out of the Masters unless it was extraordinary, the pain that he's in. Chances are very, very good he's done. And I don't mean like he's never going to win another major. I mean, he may not play another one. He may not play, period, anymore. That's how crazy this is, right? So I want to tell you what Sergio Garcia's win does. And it doesn't necessarily do this because simply it's Sergio Garcia. But I'm just looking back. As a matter of fact, if we just look at the list of Masters champions in the last, I don't know, 5 years, 10 years, maybe 15 years. I don't know how far you really want to go back here. But let's just look at the results here now that Sergio Garcia has gotten this victory. This year, it's Sergio Garcia. Last year, it was Danny Willett, shocking and upsetting Jordan Spieth, the favorite, who, of course, blew up famously and cost himself the tournament. The year before that, it was Jordan Spieth, the phenom, the 22-3? Jordan Spieth, who was going to be the new Tiger Woods. Before that, it was Bubba Watson. Before that, it was the long baller Adam Scott. Year before that, it was Bubba Watson again. Okay, there's a pair. Year before that, it was Charles Schwartzel. Year before that, it was Phil Mickelson. I'm already back to 2010 now, in case you're scoring here at home. Year before that, it was Angel Cabrera. 2008, it was Trevor Immelman. Year before that, it was Zach Johnson. Back in 2006, we're now 11 years older, it was Phil Mickelson for the second of his three. Before that, it was Tiger Woods. Then Phil Mickelson, Mike Weir, Tiger Woods, Vijay Singh. Where am I going with all of this? Here's where I'm going with all of this. We keep waiting and we keep crowning new Tiger Woodses every year in golf. We keep crowning the new one. And we keep thinking it's going to be a Rory McIlroy, or it's going to be a Dustin Johnson, or it's going to be a Jordan Spieth, or it's going to be a Jason Day. And we keep looking for that guy. A long time ago, it was supposed to be Sergio Garcia. And it just doesn't happen. It hasn't happened. There was a span in time where Tiger Woods had won 7 out of 11 major championships. 7 out of the 11. including all four of them in his possession at one time with the Masters, the U.S. Open, the Open Championship, and the PGA Championship. He had all of them in his possession, and he may have had 7 out of 11. Now, we're going on a decade here. It's a new guy every time. I mean, we did have that Bubba Watson, that I just told you about, 2 in 3 years, which is very impressive. But there's no hope of a 3 or a 4 or a 5 time Masters champion in our near future. There is no prayer of a 7 in 11 type of dominance in 11 straight majors spaced out over 3 years in our near future. Every year it's somebody new. Where are the superstars who are supposed to start dominating the sport? To me, and by the way, I'm not suggesting that the Masters lacked, well, actually I will suggest that it kind of lacked drama yesterday, even though it went into a playoff, it was just two guys. You know, there wasn't that, here comes Spieth with the incredible push. Spieth ended up finishing, 8 shots off the pace? Jordan Spieth ended up at -1 for the tournament?
That is correct.
Shot himself a 75 one day after a 68, which put him right there into contention. Ricky Fowler finished one under and 8 off the pace. Shot himself a 76. I mean, where were all of these challengers? Where were they? Rory McIlroy was never really a factor, finished 6 off the pace. He was supposed to be Tiger.
And Sunday was Rory's best round at 69.
At 69, that's exactly right, Jim Kuchlin. He was in the 70s all 3 days. 72, 73, 71, finished with that 69, finished 3 under. So my point is, you know, for the young stars who are all supposed to make us forget about Tiger Woods, all yesterday's or this past weekend's Masters tournament did for me is make me miss Tiger Woods. It made me miss the dominance of the world's truly greatest golfer. One of the true legends, one of the all-timers, and if I'm right and about his career being over and he doesn't even enter any more majors, he may try to gritty and gut his way through one just to see if he can go again, but with that back being what it has been, every time he swings and cuts loose and has to play 18, you know, it ends up tearing him up. If he's done, we need to recognize we may not see anybody like him for the next 2 decades, 3 decades, 4 decades, generation of golf fans. I mean, there was once upon a time Tiger Woods was a lock to chase down Jack Nicklaus. He was a lock to get the 18 majors that Jack won and probably won more. He has 14. And the odds are extraordinarily long that he'll ever get 15. And we're looking at a bunch of guys that we were told were going to be the next Tiger Woods. Have you seen the game that Rory McIlroy has? And look how young he is, too. Rory McIlroy has got it all. He's the next Tiger. Where are all these major championships from Rory? Jordan Spieth, too, 2 years ago when he won Augusta at 18 under, breaking one of Tiger's most hallowed records. Jordan Spieth is the guy. He's even younger. Well, where are all those major championships? Last year, the meltdown. This year, really, the meltdown in the opening round with a quadruple. Took a 9 on a par 5. Never really, again, recovered, and then blew up with a 75 again, which he matched his opening round. He had a 75 to start and a 75 to close. Those are pretty bad bookends at Augusta. And I don't say this to bury these guys. I'm just saying truly appreciate what we have lost. Truly appreciate what we have lost if Tiger Woods' career is over. And I think truly it very well may be, at least in any meaningful way. We're talking about something that we were supposed to, I mean, again, Sergio Garcia just underscores it. We were supposed to see him challenge Tiger Woods. You know, if Tiger Woods won 8 majors, you know, Sergio Garcia was going to be there matching him, winning 5. It was going to be one of those kinds of things when young Sergio took it to him. 18 years later, he just won his first. Phil Mickelson, Tiger's one-time rival, has had a nice career, has 3 green jackets himself, nowhere near, not even close to the double digits, let alone pushing up on Tiger. Jordan Spieth, still very, very young, could do some amazing things in the future, but I'm just saying, when I see majors being won by, especially Augusta, the Masters, being won by a different guy every year, it reminds me once again just how good we had it when we were watching Tiger Woods. Because we were watching something you're not going to see again. Garcia, Rose, Schwartzel, Kuchar, Peters, Casey, Chappelle, McIlroy, Scott. This is your leaderboard. And they're all varied guys, you know, no non-champions, never winning major championships. Guys who had just maybe peaked once and then never found their way back up. Let's go back to that list again. The Masters champions. Now, Garcia, Willett, Spieth, Watson, Scott. Watson, again, I give him, he's the outlier there. He won two in 3 years. Schwartzel, Mickelson, Cabrera, Immelman, Johnson, and then back to Mickelson, and then back to Tiger's last one in 2005. In the last 12 years, we've seen nine different champions. Nine different champions. Or is it 10? No, nine, because Mickelson won it twice and Watson won it twice.
Right.
So nine different champions in 12 years. There's no dominance. There's no Tiger Woods-type run. It's just not there, and it's not going to be there. Tiger Woods won it, of course, in 97, 2001, 2002, and again in 2005. He won four of them in an eight-year span. He won four in an eight-year span. Nobody is doing that anymore. So did you enjoy the final round? I'm sure you did. Was it a really wonderful, heartwarming moment for Sergio Garcia to push through with not just his first Masters Championship at Augusta, but his first major period since bursting onto the scene 18 years ago? Which, by the way, kills me because oh my God, it just ages me thinking about it because I was, 18 years ago, for crying out loud, I was a very different human being at a very, very different place in my life. And I've watched Sergio Garcia, like everybody else, go from prodigy and promised, high-ceilinged golfer with all of the promise in the world to, hey, whatever happened to him, and to footnote to, hey, do you remember that guy, to finally, hey, look at that, he won a championship. Boy, what a nice old story. My gosh, it's amazing how fast it can come and go. Just the way it did for Tiger Woods because of his health, by the way. So how did you enjoy your championship, your Masters championship yesterday? If you've got thoughts on it, I would certainly love to talk to you about it. We got a lot to get into today. That's only the tip of the proverbial iceberg in terms of things we want to talk about. NBA coming up. Maniloff will join us at 4:05 to talk about the Cavaliers atrocity. An atrocity took place in Hotlanta. An absolute atrocity. Just 2 days after the Cavaliers got rolled by the Hawks in Cleveland, they went to Atlanta and rolled the Hawks until the fourth quarter, when the atrocious defense of the Cavaliers allowed 44 inexcusable points in one quarter. 44-18, by the way, if you're keeping score at home, and you should be. They blew a 26-point fourth-quarter lead. They will not come out of the East, and oh my God, where do they go from here? I want to talk about that. We're going to talk to Maniloff a little bit about that. They are, in case you're wondering, if this is just, it's a rare spate of bad play. They're 5-5 in their last 10 games. Okay, it's an outlier. It's a blip on the radar screen. You'll never see it again. Yeah, well, they're 23-20. In their last 43 games, they're a 500 basketball team that plays bad defense and that does not get it done when the money is on the table. At least not this year. They did last year. But with the money on the table, they're folding their hand. It is embarrassing. They're not going to the finals. End of message. I'm just going to say it right now. Russell Westbrook, is he the default MVP now? It's done. The conversation has been fun all season long, but it's now over. He just broke the record for NBA triple doubles in a season with 42, breaking Oscar Robertson's record of 41. He did so with a 50-point game, and he did that while hitting the final 3 points from about 35 feet away in a 35-foot buzzer beater down two, to take himself from 47 to 50 points, to take his team to a one-point win. Averaging the triple-double for the season is locked in. He has now broken the record for the most triple-doubles in a season. He's carried a very poor roster into the playoffs, into the middle of the pack, not at the upper echelon, but in the middle of the pack in the loaded Western Conference. Is he locked in as your MVP? or is James Harden right? Is James Harden right when he says, look, my stats are just about the same as his, minus the triple-double part, but just about the same, and we've won 8 more games. I thought wins mattered. Is James Harden right? I've got an argument for James Harden that I'll talk about in a bit. But then again, I've got an argument against James Harden and not in favor of Russell Westbrook. Just using James Harden's own logic against him, if he's right, then maybe the MVP is neither one of them. Maybe it's Kawhi. We'll talk about that a little bit as well. The NFL has got some arm wrestlers, apparently former and current NFL players, who are doing arm wrestling tournaments in Vegas, and now the NFL is panicking that the players doing arm wrestling are gambling, that this is a form of gambling, and it's going to get the whole league in trouble. This just 2 weeks after they celebrated the move of the Oakland Raiders to Las Vegas. How about it? So we're going to talk a little bit about that. Tim Tebow putting on a power display in between strikeouts, just what a lot of power hitters do. They strike out a lot and they hit a lot of bombs. He's in 3 games into his minor league career, and he's doing some things. Going to talk a little bit about that. The rest in the NBA continues to be a story. Greg Popovich says no rest in the finales, his final team's final 2 games, because his team is just not there. They're just not right. He wants them to work together. Nobody's resting to get ready for the playoffs. They've got to get right. The Cavaliers taking the exact opposite approach. Big three going to rest. Last couple of games, season ends Wednesday. Big three going to rest. Who's got the right approach? Going to talk about that. And a little MMA for you, if we can squeeze it in. Anthony Johnson retired after losing the last bout of his career, as it turns out, to Daniel Cormier on Saturday. But it's not his loss or his retirement that is making people talk. What's got tongues wagging is what he said when he retired. He said what a lot of people probably have felt and wondered about. Why would you do what you do for a living? Anthony Johnson said getting punched in the head repeatedly and rolling around with guys who are trying to hurt you is just not fun. And you know what? He's right. What kind of person seriously would ever start such a career? I want to do something where I'm going to get punched and or kicked in the face. I'm going to have my bones broken with arm bars and leg bars, and I'm going to be choked into unconsciousness with sleeper holds and others, you know, guillotines. Whoever would have imagined somebody would want to do this? Anthony Johnson gave voice to that as he retired after his bout in UFC on Saturday night. So does that sound like enough for the next 90 minutes? I hope so. And if it doesn't, then you need to increase your listening pleasure, maybe by playing fantasy sports. That's how you increase your viewing pleasure with FanDuel.com. Seriously, have you tried fantasy golf yet on FanDuel? If you didn't do it for the Masters, my goodness, you can do it every week that there's a PGA tournament event, which is every week. Just pick your contest, choose your team, you know, your team of golfers, watch live and win cash prizes. It's outstanding. As they score birdies and pars and eagles and more, you win cash. And there are contests for everybody starting at just $1. So hurry up and make sure to submit your lineup before tee off on Thursday morning of every event. And there's more than just golf on FanDuel. Daily fantasy basketball is going on. You know, if you think you got it locked up, if you're looking for stat-stuffing heaven, you've got it with Russell Westbrook and James Harden. But you know what? They cost more. The key is, can you pick the right guys at bargain prices to fill out your lineup and win a daily fantasy basketball? Same thing with fantasy baseball as well. There's a new contest every day. Play as often as you want. Play in big tournaments. Play against your friends. Whatever you like, it's there for you at FanDuel.com. Did you know that over 2.5 million people have won cash prizes playing fantasy sports on FanDuel? You need to try it today. Be the 2.5 million and oneth and first, yes, I said oneth, player to win cash. Here's what you get. New users get FanDuel's fantasy combo 5-pack. It's valued at up to $50, and you get it free. That's right, $50 free in entries. 5 free entries to a combination of 50-50 beginner contest. Just finish in the top half to win the cash. To get your 5 free entries, go to FanDuel.com. Spell it right, F-A-N-D-U-E-L, not dual, dual, as in dueling. FanDuel.com. Then click the Join Now button and enter the promo code France to get your 5 free entries. You got to spell that right, too, or it won't work. F-R-A-N-T-Z, France, F-R-A-N-T-Z at FanDuel.com. Promo code France, void where prohibited. Right back, we'll get some of your phone calls going. We got Dennis Manilow coming up at 4:05 as the extravaganza rolls on this Monday right here on
106.5 The Ticket.
Yes, indeed. 3:38, thanks for being with us right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. You heard the phone number. It's 866-240-1065. Dial it up and join us. Going to talk a little MVP race right now. We have a few other things to get into as well. Maniloff joins us to talk about the Cavaliers' dysfunction and their complete lack of effort and the lack of heart and the lack of dignity, the lack of pride, the lack of courage that they have shown in trying to, quote-unquote, defend. And I use that word in quotation marks, defend their NBA championship. They ain't defending none. Absolutely none. But we are going to talk a little MVP, but not until we tell you once again about your tremendous opportunity to do a head to Orlando, Florida with the Tickets Orlando Flyaway. Yes, you and a guest could spend 4 days and three nights in Orlando, Florida to qualify. All you can do is listen to the show every day between 3 and 5, and when I tell you to call, call. That's coming in a minute. Or you can register once a day at 1065theticket.com, brought to you by the beautiful Orlando Center Marriott. Offer a world of possibilities. Allegiant Air, Shays Carpet, Toledo Express Airport, Premier Vapor, Country Hearth, and Toledo's ESPN 1065 The Ticket. How about caller number 5 right now? Dial up, put Mr. Gargano to work answering some phones. Caller number 5, you'll be qualified for the Orlando Flyaway. The grand prize drawing will be coming up later this month. 866-240-1065. Fifth caller. That is your opportunity. All right. I've also got, by the way, walleye playoff tickets coming your way. Oh, speaking of the walleye, Kush, on you there. Kush, let Frank do the phones because I'm going to talk to you for a second.
Gotcha.
Speaking of the walleye, it takes me to hockey, of course, which takes me to the Joe. And you played the Scotty Bowman clips there. You also played a little bit of Isaiah Zeke Thomas, the real Isaiah Thomas, by the way, about the closing of the Palace. Well, I mean, it's just so goofy, you know, that there's an identically named superstar.
Half of the one letter's off.
What's that?
Yeah, but there's one letter off.
One letter off. I know. That's funny. But anyway, you know, with the Joe closing, it reminds me of something you and I were kicking around last week very briefly.
Yep.
And that is, you know, the name of various arenas.
Yeah.
It wasn't the Joe that launched the conversation.
No.
It was actually the Tigers opening up their season
in Chicago
against the White Sox. And they were playing at
Guaranteed Rate Field,
which you called the worst stadium or arena name that you have ever heard. Guaranteed Rate Field.
Yeah, at least as of right now. I mean, we all understand that we live in the world where every stadium and arena is corporately named.
It's sponsored.
Man, are there just somewhere you look up at it and you think, why the hell would you put that on a stadium name? And that's one of them to me. It just cries
the flip
out,
side
I don't
of
deserve
that.
To be on a stadium.
The flip side of that to me is, of course, Joe Louis Arena, yeah. You know, which is affectionately been known as the Joe for all of these decades.
Right.
And I love that name just because I love what it stands for. It's Joe. First of all, I love any arena now in 2017 or in really the last decade or so. Any arena that does not cave in or any sports league that does not cave in or sports team and take that, you know, tens of millions of dollars in sponsorship money.
I'm with you there.
You know, it's like when Jacobs Field was built. You know, Dick Jacobs said, no, we're not selling out and putting a sponsor's name on it. It became Jacobs Field. And,
mm-hmm.
Of course, we all know what happened. Jacobs sold the team, and eventually they named it Progressive Field. And, you know, so there it is, you know, the insurance company.
Yep.
Same thing with Gund Arena. When they built that whole complex out there in Cleveland, Gund Arena was built. It maintained the
right.
name of the owner, George Gund and Gordon Gund.
Yep, yep.
But, of course, then Dan Gilbert buys it. He puts his company's logo all over it. It's the Q, which, you know, I get it. But it just made me lament a little bit, you know, the nonstop corporatizing, if that's a verb, of all things sports. And like I said, I'm not down on advertising. Don't get me wrong. Advertising is the name of our business.
Right.
I mean, that's how we are in business. So I'm not down on advertising. If somebody wants to buy the name of our studio or the studio that you're sitting in right there, Kush, you know, if they want to call this the XYZ Travel Company Studio and they're willing to pay the price, then we'll call it the XYZ Travel Company Studio.
Thought it before.
In the same
I'm
way
sure
that
we'll
they
do
will
it again.
Call Guaranteed Rate Field, Guaranteed Rate Field.
Yep.
If somebody's willing to pay the price. But it did kind of have us wondering, which ones are the worst? Which are the worst stadium names or arena names going, you know, thanks to corporate shills, well, not shills, corporations that do indeed spend all that money, but they just don't really think it through, and they just maybe put some bad ideas up there.
Yeah.
Once again, not down on advertising or the idea. It's just that once you do corporately name your building, can you make it something cool? Can you make it something catchy? Can you make it something fun? And I will say there are some that do.
Yeah.
There really are. I'll give you an example, and I know it sounds goofy because I'm, you know, politically speaking, I'm a conservative-minded guy, and the opposite of conservatism is progressivism. But the name kind of fits a ballpark. If you've got to take Jacobs Field away and you call it Progressive Field, it's like we are, you know, progressing toward a championship. I can live with that. It's not as bad as Guaranteed Rate,
right?
To be certain. So there are some decent ones. And then there's some ones that make you kind of go, what were they thinking?
Yep.
Jim, I asked you to compile a list of the worst ones that you have found or that you can find, that you can think of anyway. What do you got?
First of all, on that type of topic, I was going through some of them, and one that did not pop into my head because, you know, it turns out, and I looked this up to make sure, this one is corporate name, but it doesn't sound like it when you talk about the Cincinnati Reds playing in Great American Ballpark.
I love Great American Ballpark.
But that's actually a corporate name. I didn't realize this until I started scanning through. I'm like, I was just thought that was a cool name.
But that's one that just makes sense because it's paid for by Great America Parks, the amusement parks, Great America, right?
Yep. Yeah. So that's just one of them. That one fits.
That's one of those ones where I like it. I'm calling my ballpark. If I'm a Reds fan or a Reds owner, I'm calling our ballpark the Great American Ballpark. And it works because of the Great American Amusement Park sponsorship.
Exactly.
I don't care if it's corporately owned or not. That name works.
Right.
That's very well done.
Right. So that's one on the opposite end of the spectrum. But,
yes.
But a couple of them that jump out at me. First of all, let's go back to that alleged All-Star game that the NBA had a couple months ago. Do you remember that it was in New Orleans? What's the name of that building?
Because the Smoothie Center, isn't it?
The Smoothie King Center.
Smoothie King.
So that's definitely on
that's
my
terrible.
List.
That's terrible.
By the way, hold
on a second. I say that with a little bit of history with that name because that is the name that my kids gave our third cat that we took in. Smoothie. Not Smoothie King, but Smoothie. And I my son named her a few years ago, and I said, why? And he just said, because she's smooth. And I don't think he was really thinking about the drink, a smoothie, but he said, because she's so smooth.
Yep.
I said, damn right, she is. And so smoothie it was, and it's kind of funny. But anyway, Smoothie King Center, no.
Yeah,
works for a cat, not so much for an arena.
Exactly.
What else?
Believe it or not, Sacramento's, I had to put them on there. Right now it's called the Golden One Center. Which isn't so bad until you remember what they named it just a couple years ago. This is the building once known as Arco Arena. Just a couple years ago, wasn't it the Sleepy Train Center or something? It was like it was the Sleepy Train Center until 2 years ago.
I actually forgot about that, to be honest
with
you. Because, you know, it's West Coast, and it's not just West Coast.
Sure.
It's not flashy West Coast. It's not, you know, Vegas or L.A. or San Francisco or something. It's up there in Sacto, so... I kind of forgot about that. That's a terrible one.
Yep.
That's a terrible one. That's telling people, yay, come to watch the games at our place. You'll get the best sleep you've ever had. That just doesn't work.
Yeah. So, a couple others. Phoenix. It's now called the Talking Stick Resort Arena for the home of the Phoenix Suns nowadays.
Talking Stick Resort. That's the actual name.
Yes.
Awful.
Not exactly.
What else?
I have a bone to pick with this one in Milwaukee. Now, they're going to be moving out of this building very soon. But forever and a day, it's been what? The Bradley Center, right?
Yeah.
Well, no, now it's the BMO Harris Bradley Center.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
It's not stupid. It's just clunky.
Yeah, it's clunky, and you're putting the name in front of the original name, but not actually getting rid of the original name.
Yeah.
Like how you were talking about the Q and Gun Arena.
That's not that uncommon. Look at Minneapolis.
True.
They were the Hubert H. Humphrey Metrodome, right?
Yep. Yes.
And now they're the Mall of America Field at the Hubert H. Humphrey Metrodome. Talk about a mouthful of crap.
Right.
That's what you get there.
Let's see. A couple others. Believe it or not, I didn't find any that were truly, really just sound bad off the tongue for the NFL, but I still got a bone to pick.
Oh, I do. I can tell one that sounds terrible right off the tongue, but go ahead. What do you got?
But my bone to pick, therefore, still has to be with the Dolphins. In the building that was once upon a time known as Joe Robbie Stadium, that has had seemingly a quadrillion names ever since, it's now the Hard Rock Stadium. Now, that doesn't sound so bad.
I actually kind of like that.
Until you remember one of the many names it used to have. And I realize this is a Jimmy Buffett reference or something like that. But do you remember when it was called Land Shark Stadium a couple years ago?
No.
Yes, there was a couple-year span where the Dolphins played in Land Shark Stadium. And that just sounds so convoluted when you say it.
Yeah, that's messed up.
Even with the Jimmy Buffett kind of reference and all that, Ever since then, my philosophy for the Miami Dolphins is that's it. Next time you change your arena, that stadium's ain't, because we know you'll do it again, you got to just go all the way and make it the Sharknado Stadium. I mean, seriously.
That's pretty bad. Let me tell you one that I can't stand, okay, really, in the NFL. And it's within one of the divisions that we cover, and there's a lot of fans actually in this in Toledo or Northwest Ohio. I can't stand what Pittsburgh did to Three Rivers. The fact that it's now the Ketchup Palace or the Ketchup, what is that? What they nicknamed it, Heinz Field?
Yeah.
They nicknamed Heinz Field after the ketchup, of course, which is based in Pittsburgh.
Right.
You know, they call it like the Ketchup Palace or something like that. And it's just, it's annoying. It's just stupid. It's just such a weird, goofy stadium name. It's like we don't care to make it cool. And maybe it's worse because of the name before it was so cool. They named it Three Rivers because, yeah, of course, it's where, you know, the confluence of the Monongahela, the Allegheny, and the Ohio River, you know, where they all come, yeah, together. I think that's the three, isn't it?
Yes.
You know, which is kind of neat. You know, this is where all the rivers all kind of merge into one. So we are Three River Stadium. It was neat. It was unique and it was cool.
Yeah.
And then if you're going to sell it to a corporation, I get it, like I said, but Heinz, it's just, it's weird to me. It's goofy.
Yeah.
The Steelers are black and gold, and all I picture is a red ketchup.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's just, yeah, it's just strange like that.
One other random one that I'm going to bring up, right, and it's really to kind of inform those who may have forgotten that sometimes, not just sounding bad, but naming a stadium after, you know, with the corporate name can sometimes lead to problems. In this case, I'm referring to the Houston Astros, who for a few years now, obviously, have been playing in Minute Maid Park.
Right.
But, Bob, do you remember what that stadium was first called when it was first built?
Yeah, Enron.
Yeah.
That's Enron, which, of course, is known for, you know, the scandal and, yep, the scam that cost, I don't know how many people, their life savings.
Yeah, exactly. So I had to put that one on the list just to remind everyone what that stadium was originally called before it became Minute Maid Park. And, you know, they kind of couldn't use the Enron name anymore. So that's just a couple of them. Ooh, one that I picked a bone with in the National Hockey League. In Calgary, where the Flames play, it's the same building. And it had, to me, one of the coolest names in sports before they stuck the sponsor in front, a new sponsor in front of it. It used to be just called the Saddle Dome. I don't know why, but I loved that name. Now it's the Scotiabank Saddle Dome. So you stick the corporate
the what dome? The Saddle Dome?
The Saddle Dome is what the arena that the Calgary Flames and the NHL played. It's the same building.
Now help me out here. I don't know much about Canada or Canada geography. Is Calgary, like, is it a cowboy country?
It is one of those western provinces.
It is.
It is over there. It's not in Ontario or anything, yeah.
Where the deer and the antelope play, right?
I suppose you could say that, sure.
Okay. All right. Well, yeah, I get the Saddle Dome reference, and then I certainly understand sticking the corporation in front of it would be annoying. I don't disagree with that. But let me throw one more in there, because I didn't think of it myself. I just found a list, mm-hmm, of bad stadium names.
Yep.
And I didn't realize this, and I'm assuming this is for the Louisville Cardinal basketball team.
Oh, I know where you're going. I didn't go to the college level on this, but I know exactly where you're going.
They play in an arena that is called, according to what I just found on thescore.com, their arena is called the KFC, meaning Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Right.
KFC Yum Center. The Yum is followed by an exclamation point. The KFC Yum Center, Louisville. I cannot imagine how much they have to pay the play-by-play guy for Louisville basketball to sit there and say, welcome to the KFC Yum Center. Here as the Cardinals get set to take on.
We all know the top prospects in high school basketball have been dying and dreaming before they were born to play in the KFC Yum Center.
I mean, is it not? I mean, it's just so embarrassing. And not only that, Jim, I'm looking at the logo on the outside of the stadium because I pulled this up, as I mentioned. The logo on the outside of the stadium has the KFC in kind of the italicized Times New Roman font, which is
right,
fine.
Right, right, yeah.
But then in the middle and before center is the Yum in a red speaking balloon. You know, like a cartoon speaking balloon.
Like a comic book or something.
The little circle with the little arrow saying who said it.
Yeah.
And inside the speaking balloon, it's the capital letter Yum with the exclamation point. So it's KFC Yum Center. Oh, my Lord in heaven. Whoever marketed that, honest to God, should be fired yesterday.
Yep.
That is painful. And which brings me to one last point on this. How can it be that two of the biggest, most well-known stadiums in history have never, on the college level, have never given in to the corporate sponsorship temptation and those dollars? And of course, I speak of the beloved historic horseshoe known as Ohio Stadium. Is it still known as Ohio Stadium?
Yes, or am I wrong? Official name is still Ohio Stadium.
They've never put a corporate tag on it.
Never.
And the name is Ohio Stadium. The nickname is the horseshoe, even though they closed in the horseshoe, as we know. But it's still, you know, considered the horseshoe. And, of course, the big house. Isn't Michigan Stadium still just known as Michigan Stadium?
That is correct.
How has no corporation been able to come up with the, you know, $150 million or whatever it would take to have one of the two most famous stadiums in the world in the history of college sports, you know, be part of their branding? I'm stunned by that.
I'm sure calls have been made over the years, in which case I tip my cap to Ohio State and Michigan for obviously saying no.
But since when have Ohio State or Michigan ever said no to $100 million? And not just them, but any of them.
True.
You know what I mean? I mean, they are in the we need to make billions of dollars every year business.
Right.
And it's one of the reasons why they don't have any interest in you know, paying the college athletes whenever that conversation comes up. And again, I don't want to get into that because that's a whole other story.
Not to mention, well, I'm sure there'll be a day, you know, coming up in the fall where we'll have time
for
it.
Well, we just had one last week. You weren't here, Jim. I think you were gone when Dan Dockich had a Twitter feud with Frank Kaminsky, the former player of the year at Wisconsin.
I do remember reading about that. Yep.
Yeah. But anyway, you know, I mean, they're all about profit, which I understand. But in all seriousness, if it can get you better facilities to put somebody's name on it, I'm just stunned that nobody's done it yet. And I guess I would have to go on and say, is Alabama's field, does it have a corporate name? Does the swamp down in Gainesville have a corporate name on it?
I don't think so.
So, I mean, it's weird that there are some colleges like Louisville, like I just explained. What about Ohio State's basketball arena? That's nationwide, right?
No, it's Schottenstein.
Oh, Schottenstein. No. Schottenstein.
I thought it was Value City Arena.
Value City Arena.
Yeah, it's so nationwide is where the Blue Jackets play.
Yeah, what was the basketball arena used to, what did it used to be called? St. John's.
Yes, that was the other one. The Value City Arena is the newer building, I believe.
Okay,
so it's the official name is the Value City Arena at the Jerome Schottenstein Center.
Okay, that makes that Jerome right.
Schottenstein, I assume, is a famous alum who donated a ton of money, I would imagine.
Right.
Okay, which is fine. You know, they put names on buildings all the time, libraries, residence halls, you know, et cetera.
You know, the dynamic you're making me think of as you're talking about this, when it comes on the college level, because it just occurred to me, Michigan basketball plays at the Chrysler Arena. When they were the Fab Five, it was right. The Chrysler Arena. So what thought just
But that's not the same Chrysler. That's not the car manufacturer.
No, that's an old athletic.
That's
director.
Chrysler. Right. That was a former coach.
That's what I thought.
Chrysler, yeah. I believe, right?
I believe so. The point I'm trying that just popped into my head is, and just use Ohio State for the example. It's the Value City Arena, Chastain Center, but football doesn't need it. You know, you asked about Alabama,
but it's not
and
about
Florida,
football. But it's
USC
not about,
doesn't Jim, you know Jim, plays in the old Coliseum.
Jim, the football fields are not owned by the football team; they're owned by the university.
True.
So it's not just football doesn't need it. Why would they sell the names of the basketball arenas, Value City, like you pointed out, the Kentucky Fried Chicken Yum Center down? Why would they sell those out, but not the football fields? I just can't understand that. It's all about making the university money.
I suppose
that money isn't just kept for. You know, if you sell the name of the football stadium, it's not like all the money goes to the football team.
Yeah.
It goes to the university.
No, that's true. And I suppose it must vary between the preference of those in charge of each college. Because I was going to say something like, well, it seems like the highest level Division I football, they don't need corporate sponsors. But then again, I just thought right here in our own backyard in MAC territory, it's the Glass Bowl, Savage Arena. And that it's Doit Perry Stadium and Stroh Center. None of those names for Toledo and Bowling Green are corporate in any way.
Right. No, they're
wonderful.
And
that's a lower level where you figure maybe they would definitely want to take the extra couple bucks because they're not in the Big Ten or something.
Yeah, it's very strange.
College seems to vary.
College. Here's a story. College football stadium naming rights where FAU's ranks in dollars. Okay, here are some of them. North Texas, the Mean Green of North Texas. Their stadium name is Apogee Stadium, which is named after a bank, apparently.
Okay. That's Conference USA.
Is Apogee a bank? I don't even know what that is, but it says here that... Oh, no, I take it back. It says they're going to bank $1 million a year over the course of a 20-year deal. I don't know what Apogee is. Wake Forest has sold their stadium name to BB&T Field. BB&T, that is a bank. UCF, University of Central Florida, Bright House Network Stadium. Isn't that a cable company?
I believe that sounds right.
Capital One Field at Maryland, obviously a lender.
Yep.
Carrier Dome. Carrier is what kind of machine? They make machinery. A Carrier, like air conditioning.
Yeah.
Air conditioners, yeah. Things like that, right?
Right.
High Point Solutions at Rutgers. High Point is, I don't know what kind of business it is, but that's a 10-year partnership. Gives them 600. Listen to me. High Point is paying Rutgers.
Rutgers.
$650,000 a year. $650,000 a year. Rutgers football is a joke. I would have to believe that putting a name on Ohio Stadium would be a $5-6 million a year deal.
Seems like it
would
be easy.
I mean, if they get almost $750,000 for yeah. Rutgers, Ohio State should get $5-10 million a year from somebody.
They could if they so wished, yeah.
Houchins Industries / LT Smith Stadium at Western Kentucky. That was a one-time payment of $5 million to put that. It must be in perpetuity. Jones AT&T Stadium at Texas Tech for the communications company. Infocision. Oh, Akron. There you go.
Yeah.
Akron.
Akron's one.
It's Infocision Stadium, which is named for the Summa Health System, which gives Akron $250,000 a year for the next two decades. So the point is, there it is. Oh, how about this? Louisville cashing in all over the place. They get KFC Yum for the basketball arena. They get $5 million for Papa John's Cardinal Stadium in Louisville. So they're selling chicken in the basketball games, and they're selling pizza at the football games, and they're making a ton of money with it. All right, got to get out. Top of the hour, Sports Center is coming your way. We're going to talk basketball with Maniloff coming up right here on ESPN 106.
Ball is up. The tip is won by Atlanta. Over down to Millsap to tie it.
We had some bad breaks, obviously, you know, with the jump ball. A couple of their guys were out of bounds. With the jump ball for Kyrie in the corner, I'm sitting right next to the ref and asking for a timeout. And the explanation he gave me, I never heard before in my 14-year career. Never. So he told me that I'm not allowed to call timeout because he didn't know who had possession of the ball. And I was the one who entered the ball to Kyrie. And as soon as I seen Millsap go trap Kyrie in the short corner, I looked at him and called timeout. Twice, at least twice, and he wasn't even paying me no attention. You know, take away from the fact that, you know, we still had a huge lead to start the fourth. You know, every play counts no matter what's going on.
How much is the fine for talking about the refs?
It's like 50, 25, not worth it.
You know, we just gotta, you know, move on from here.
I can't remember a game with that type of a deficit that I've been a part of maybe my rookie season, but yeah, it was ugly.
So much joy, so proud of the way we worked all week. There was just a lot of different thoughts, little flashes of past moments. Everything that's happened in my career, good and bad and not so good and not so bad, all those things kind of came through. And obviously everything was very fast. And it was even difficult to like focus on it. It was a very special moment. Now I'm a major champion. It's great. It's amazing. It doesn't change anything in me. I'm still the same guy. I have a master's tournament now. Happiness in my life, it doesn't depend only on that.
10 seconds to go. Everybody cheering. Bo Bennett out the center, fires it. Jimmy Howard sticks it into the corner. Crowd making noise. Pile up in that right corner, and this game is over. And in the final game at Joe Louis Arena, the Detroit Red Wings defeat the New Jersey Devils 4-1.
You know, when I first came here, I was going to come for just a couple of years, and I ended up staying 15, 9 as the coach. I guess the memories are everything lasts so long here, you know. Nick Lidstrom and Steve Yzerman and the Illich family owning it for so long. My memory would be, obviously, the first cup. I think players that came to Detroit wanted to come here, and they wanted to stay, and there was this special feeling, especially being on such a great team. Well, I had a pretty busy itinerary, but I wasn't going to miss it. I only came up this morning, but I'm so happy I did.
Isaiah Guns, yes! He's got it! He's got it! Chauncey
2004 NBA champion Detroit Pistons.
And so welcome to the Palace of Auburn Hills.
The Palace of Auburn Hills was more than just bricks and beams. It was the heart and soul of the Detroit basketball community. It was the palace that kids like Chris Webber, Jalen Rose, and Steve Smith grew up loving and dreamed of playing in one day. The fans who filled the seats and the players who ran the court made everlasting memories for generations to come.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
It is indeed rolling onward. We are now. It's 13 minutes after 4 right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are Toledo's sports leader, and we play better defense here than they do out in Cleveland. That I can assure you. Instead of bitching about the foul call on LeBron's sixth, which was a terrible call, how come they're not bitching about the 44 points allowed in the fourth? I have reached my wit's end with the non-defending champions, the Cleveland Cavaliers. And when I say that, I mean it exactly literally. They are not defending anybody or anything at any time. Defense is just a rumor out there in Cleveland, even as the playoffs approach. And joining us now to gripe about it with me is our good friend Dennis Mandeloff from the CLE. D-Man, how are you, brother?
What's up, Bob France? How are you, buddy?
I'm done, man. I'm just, you know, we asked you about a week ago, or maybe it was 2 weeks ago, how close you were to kind of jumping off the bandwagon. And not that you won't support the team that you love, but, you know, do you really think they're going to go back to the finals and make their way out of the East? And at that time, Dennis, you said doubtful. Now, since you said doubtful that they're going to come out of the East, which is the first time I've heard you be that harsh about the way they're playing, since that time, a couple of things have happened. One, they blew out the Boston Celtics on the road at Boston, their presumed number one rival in the East, probably making people feel a lot better about things. But after that, we all know a blowout loss to the Hawks at home, and then the giving up of a 26-point lead in the fourth quarter on the road against Atlanta. So where are, if you were doubtful a week ago, where are you now with the non-defending champion Cavaliers? Are they coming out of the East in your mind?
No, I don't think so. But first of all, Bob, not only a home loss to the Hawks, but a home loss to the Hawks B team. You know, that was what was
Thank
even
you.
More.
I forgot about that. Great point.
Yeah, the Hawks were punting that game, and the Cavs played their regulars and still lost. This team is a mess, mostly on the defensive side, of course. That's obvious. You're right. The Cavaliers had a right to gripe about several calls down the stretch in the Atlanta game, but they did take ownership of how bad their defense was. It wasn't like they made a point to tell the reporters there that, you know, hey, we don't like some of the calls, but ultimately our defense is what cost us. LeBron is trying to put a good face on it. He's trying to stay positive for his guys. But this team is an absolute steaming pile defensively. And the reason I don't think they're coming out of the East is I don't see how they are going to, again, we've used the word so many times, it's a cliche, flip the switch, how they're going to be able to defend at a level high enough to compensate, you know, or to get them through while their offense plays well. Last year and the year before that, they played better defense in the postseason, but they didn't have as far to go as they do this year in terms of, you know, moving from horrible to competent. They have so far to go and virtually no time to do it. And it looks like they're going to rest their big guys for the remaining week and just hand the Celtics the number one seed. So I don't think
how can they do that, Dennis? I'm sorry to interrupt, but I got to go there. How can that be the right move here? Do you know who's not doing that in their last two games? The man who invented this whole thing about resting his guys. Greg Popovich said yesterday, there will be no resting of our regulars in the last two games. We can't afford it. We're not there. We're not right. Our chemistry isn't right. We're not playing together the right way. We are going to fix this before we get to the playoffs. Now, the Cavaliers are the farthest thing in the world from right. They are far more wrong than the San Antonio Spurs are. And yet, five-time NBA champion coach Greg Popovich says, we're going to play ourselves into getting ready for the playoffs. And Tyronn Lue, who has coached this team to a 23-20 record in the last 43 games, says, yeah, I'm going to sit my guys, and we'll put them all back together again in the playoffs.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think you do have to take each team and each team's personnel case by case basis. In the case of the Cavaliers, there's something that has to be addressed right out of the gate, and that is Kyrie's surgically repaired knee. It has flared up. It's been barking. Yes, he put up phone numbers, yesterday against the Hawks, but he says on off days his knee's killing him. So there's a knee issue there with Kyrie that needs to be rested, I believe, and also because he did put extra miles on the tires during the summer playing for the world team. In the case of LeBron, I mean, I don't know. I just don't see how much more they could possibly improve defensively just because LeBron plays against the Heat tonight on the second day of a back-to-back when he played 47 minutes against the Hawks. So I don't blame him for resting LeBron in this
hold
case.
On, let's stop there. No, again, I hate to interrupt, but I got to take him point by point or I'll forget him because of my ADHD. Dennis, how and why did Tyronn Lue play LeBron James 47 minutes against the Hawks? When you're up 26 in the fourth quarter, how on earth is he still in the basketball game if rest is a factor?
I totally agree with you. And here's what's weird. The irony is, as bad as the Cavs bench is, the Cavs bench probably could have held on with a 26-point lead in the fourth quarter if he had just gone with the subs. And instead, he stayed with the regulars, and they're the ones that got blitzed early in the quarter. I think it was a 7-0 run or something. All of a sudden, the Hawks started feeling good about themselves. So, yeah, it was a disaster on so many fronts for the Cavaliers last night. Not the least of which, of course, was LeBron's total minutes and total energy expended. It worked out in the worst possible way for the Cavaliers on all facets. But again, I just think you've heard me say this on your show before, and we have a difference of opinion. I would rather arrested LeBron and take my chances than try to grind for that number one seed and let's say. You know, because clearly they did try yesterday.
Yeah, I would say they did, Dennis, because after the Celtics, you know, and of course he played a ton then, which he didn't really need to because they were blowing out the Celtics. Then he played against the Hawks both times, even though they had the B team going, as you pointed out. And then he played, I guess those were the last two games. So it seems to me like they were saying, we do want the number one seed. We're going to play him and we're going to play him long and whatever it takes to win these games.
Yeah, I think they tried desperately to win yesterday, and when they didn't lose and those guys piled up minutes, I mean, obviously overtime, worst possible way to lose in this case. But when they realized, you know what, not only did we lose, we lost in OT, LeBron and Kyrie played mega minutes, we got to turn around and play Miami real quickly. Miami desperately needs it. Miami's played well against the Cavaliers this year. So I think they just counted the cost and said, we would rather go into the playoffs as the number two seed with a rested LeBron and Kyrie for the final 5-6 days of the regular season than, you know, scramble and scratch and claw to try to win against the Heat, come up short again, and all of a sudden, you know, LeBron's back is aching and Kyrie's knee's throbbing.
Forgetting about the rest, let's just talk about the play. Let's talk about the terrible defense, which you kind of just generalized about. Let's talk about the fourth quarter. Giving up 44 points and only scoring 18 are two different things. Number one, you can't play defense. That's obvious. Number two, the offense is so disjointed, which is, again, why, to me, I would play them. Not necessarily as you pointed out, we disagree on this, not really in the attempt to win the Eastern Conference and have the home court advantage, blah, 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 although I still think that's very important, but just to get themselves right. Not necessarily for victories in the standings, but we've got to get right. The offense scored 18 points. LeBron was terrible in the fourth quarter. Turnovers, fouls on three-point shots, terrible inbounds passes that lead to the jump ball in the corner that led to the Paul Millsap jumper to send it to
OT. I mean, all of this stuff,
Dennis, is just so un-LeBron-like, and it's certainly not becoming of a defending NBA champion. So what about just the play? Is this team just straight up, flat out, not as good as they were a year ago, either in talent or in performance?
Yeah, I mean, we thought that with the acquisitions that Griffin made, guys like Korver, Deron Williams, of course, Bogut before he got hurt, you know, we thought that this was going to be a deeper team and a better team going into the postseason this year than it was last year. And obviously, they had the championship pedigree with them now. So, but it's turned out to be the opposite. They're not nearly as good of a team this year as they were last year, and certainly not playing anywhere near the level going into the postseason that they were in the previous 2 years. So this team has tremendous amount of issues. I think you're not going to want to hear this, but I think part of LeBron's fourth quarter trouble is fatigue. I think he's tired, and, you know, that's not an excuse. That's just reality because of the responsibility that's on his shoulders with this team. But here's your point about the offense. The Cavaliers' offense is going to be, as long as Kyrie and LeBron are on the team, it is going to be based on individuals. It's going to be based on, you know, I'm not going to say a 2-on-5 scenario, but it's not the classic team-oriented offense that you see from people like San Antonio and the Hawks. It's more individual-based. It's guys creating themselves off the dribble as opposed to whipping the ball around. Now, every once in a while, the Cavs will do that, but that's not their DNA. It's not in their DNA. So I don't think that you need that on-court chemistry offensively for this offense to thrive. You just have to have guys hitting shots. On the defensive side, I'll listen, you know, where you do want to have the guys out on the court at the same time. The problem defensively is I just don't think they have guys who are good enough to defend. I mean, you could talk all you want about communication and chemistry on the defensive side and helping each other, but I just think they are so mediocre to bad individually as on ball. This is not going to suddenly improve. And Kyrie, unfortunately, is the main culprit here. I don't know that I can recall, as gifted as Kyrie is, I don't know that I can recall a great offensive player being as bad defensively as Kyrie Irving.
Dennis Manilow joining us, breaking down what's wrong with the defending champion Cleveland Cavaliers as they have just absolutely struggled isn't the right word. I mean, stumbled and bumbled and fumbled and just crapped themselves to the point where they're 23-20 in their last 43 games, are not going to be the number one seed in the Eastern Conference, and they're going to have their hands full, I think, with either or both of two very strong contenders now in the East, in the Boston Celtics and the Washington Wizards, depending on how the seeding plays out there and whom they face and when they face them. So, Dennis, again, I think everything you've said is fair. The resting thing for LeBron James, okay, but again, I cannot understand how they can justify sitting him in a game at Memphis, for example, or sitting him in a game at against Los Angeles at the Clippers, but then playing him for 47 minutes in a game in which they've been winning by 26 points for three quarters and into the fourth quarter. How he doesn't take most of that night off while having built that lead is just beyond me. So do they want to rest him or do they not? I think Ty Lue is a lot more in over his head than people realize. I think, quite frankly, he does not know how to manage minutes. I don't think he knows how to manage players. And I'll tell you something else, Dennis. If this 23-20 in the last 43 games and this defense, which is second worst defensive efficiency in the National Basketball Association, was happening under David Blatt, LeBron James right now would be ripping him daily at press conferences, publicly humiliating him in huddles, and getting him fired. That's what would be happening here. But nobody says anything about Ty Lue because that's LeBron's hand-picked guy.
You stole my thunder there. I will amend one thing you said. I don't know that it was a hand-pick for LeBron in terms of Ty Lue, but I definitely, I mean, it's no secret, he did not want to play for Coach Blatt any longer than he had to. It was a matter of, okay, bring in somebody who could probably appease LeBron, and Tyronn Lue seemed like the right guy. But you're absolutely right. If this were happening under David Blatt's watch, it wouldn't be happening under David Blatt's watch because he would have been fired a long time ago.
Yep.
In the middle of this mediocre 43-game stretch, which is, by the way, more than half the season we're talking about here, they've been really mediocre to bad. So, yes, David Blatt, different set of standards that he operated under. I'm not an apologist for David Blatt. I think it was the right move at the time, and it proved to be correct because they did win a title. However, and this has bought Ty Lue, you know, a bulletproof vest when it comes to criticism because, you know, and I think Ty Lue's a little sensitive about any criticism that comes his way. It's like, dude, wait a minute. You're the coach of the defending champs, and your team is 500 for more than half the season. You know, people have a right to wonder, what are you doing? And you're absolutely right, Bob. The biggest criticism that I have of Ty Lue, and I've liked Ty Lue. I've expressed my like of him and respect for what he does and what he knows, but his mismanagement of the minutes is mind-blowing to me.
Yeah, it is.
Especially as pertains to LeBron James. Listen, I don't care if LeBron says, I want to play every game, every minute, every game, whatever. I don't care. You're the head coach. You know he's in his 14th season. You know he said, just get me to the playoffs healthy, and I'll handle it. I'll win on the road if need be. And yet you keep running him out there, and not only do you run him out there, you run him into the ground while he's out there. It's just mind-numbing to me, and yesterday was the perfect example. You sit LeBron at the start of the fourth quarter, and guess what? If the B team or whoever's out there blows that lead, then you know what? So be it. You guys screwed up, but we are not going to run LeBron into the ground this close to the playoffs. He does the opposite, and, you know, so I don't get it. I don't understand the allocation of minutes.
Yeah, and again, what makes it so confusing and confounding is the mixed message here. It's like, well, we're going to rest him because we want him to be fresh, as you just pointed out, and as LeBron has said, and so on and so forth, yet we're playing him in games that are decided, and then saying, okay, now we're going to let him sit the last two games of the season because it doesn't matter. So wait a minute, which one is it? I mean, he is so confused and so confounding, I can't even understand it. And yet,
Bob, I think he's just as confused about how to solve the defense. I really don't think Ty Lue has a clue about how to fix this defense.
I completely agree. Well, let's get to some other NBA issues, Dennis, while I have you here. So Russell Westbrook breaks the record yesterday with his 42nd trip dub. He does it with a 50-point game, the final three of which come from about 35 feet away at the buzzer down two to win the game. Is he the runaway, walkaway, whatever you want to call it, MVP of this league?
He should be, yeah. I mean, I've always advocated for LeBron and saying that, you know, somebody has to have a phenomenal season to rip it from LeBron, even though he hasn't held it the last couple of years. But this is one of those cases where he, you know, you have a player in Russell Westbrook who was so good that it's impossible to ignore. And I, you know, I guess you could make a case for Harden as well and maybe Kawhi and, of course, LeBron. But to me, the MVP of this league is Russell Westbrook. It's not 100% based on averaging a triple-double for a season, although, of course, that's important. It's the how important he is to his team, how dominant he has been, how unstoppable he has been in certain situations, in a lot of situations. So, yes, I would say Westbrook deserves to be the MVP in 2016-17.
Couple of different follow-ups on that. One, how important is a triple-double really? We kind of take it, I think, and we bestow upon it royalty. And it's you are the ultimate all-around player if you get a triple-double. And only one guy has ever done it for an entire season since 1961 when Oscar did. Well, Oscar's the only one. I mean, it was back in 61. And because of that, I think we just decide that is the be-all, end-all. But I've been thinking about this, Dennis, and do we overstate and overrate that statistic? And just to give an example of what I mean by it, What would you say is a better game for your team? A guy who scores 33 and grabs 10 rebounds and hands out 6 assists? Or a guy who scored 14 points and had 10 and 10? One guy's got a triple-double. He's got to be the guy doing it all. But the guy with 32, 10, and 6 didn't get that wonderfully magical name after his game. It's his ninth triple-double of the year. But he accounted for a hell of a lot more points and a hell of a lot more production for his team. Has Russell kind of made this thing maybe more important than it really is because of his incredible flair for the dramatics while he does it?
I've thought that for a long time. I did think it for a long time. I've changed course on it. I don't think it's that way with me. I mean, certainly not with me. I think Westbrook deserves to get credit for those numbers. As long as it isn't a blatant stat padding to get there, and we've seen some examples. Let's not sugarcoat. I mean, the Phoenix game was an example of where they were desperately trying to get him one and all that. That's kind of crazy stuff. And meanwhile, they're getting blown out by the Suns, by the hapless Suns. So here's the thing. To me, if he's doing this on a terrible team, then I am going to say, hold on a second. What's the big deal? He's just a stats guy on a bad team. But the fact is that, the Thunder is a solid team. They're not spectacular, but they're solid. And he is the reason why they are what they are. I mean, I've maintained that the two most valuable players to their respective teams, in other words, guys that if you take them off their team, they're going nowhere, are LeBron and Westbrook. And perhaps Harden, but those two guys are the ones I think of right away, LeBron and Westbrook.
Let me give you a couple.
Westbrook,
I'm sorry, go ahead and finish that thought.
No, I mean, in my feeling there, then Westbrook has earned what he's gotten, and he's helped his team win games, and that's why I'm okay with it.
Okay, fair enough. I just wanted to give you a stat because that really wasn't necessarily to rip Russell Westbrook at all when I asked is it the statistic itself or it was more of a general question about a player, getting a triple-double like Jason Kidd had. He was the king of triple-doubles for a long time, but he was never a great scorer. So he was always around, 12, 11, and 11 and say, oh, look at that. But is that as good as somebody doing more like I described? But here's a stat for you. Russell Westbrook, in games in which he has triple-doubled now this season, is 33-9, which means, obviously, it's extraordinarily important to his team's success that he has that triple-double. He's 33-9. Did you know what the Cavaliers' record is in the 13 games that LeBron James has triple-doubled this year? They're 8-5.
7-6?
Close, 8-5. 8-5 in 13 games. So, in other words, a triple-double can be extraordinarily valuable in some cases, but not so much in others. It doesn't seem to mean as much when LeBron James does it, and he's doing it on a team where he doesn't have to do it because he's got far better players around him in the form of Kyrie and Kevin Love and J.R. Smith and so on than Russell Westbrook does out there in Oklahoma City. Why do you think they're not better, the Cavs, when he triple-doubles the way that the Thunder really are, even though they have better players in Cleveland?
Well, I don't think it's obviously not as big a sample size with LeBron and LeBron's triple doubles as it is with Westbrook. But I hear what you're saying. I feel like, the Cavs' defensive deficiencies are so. Oh, shoot. Hold on a second, Bob. Sorry.
Sure.
I got a little issue here. Sorry. I'm doing my interview with you while I'm driving and I just about got hit by a car.
Oh, that's not good. So, you need to pull over. Pull over when we're talking.
I just avoided a car accident by about a fraction of a fraction of an inch.
Oh, my God. Do you want to call me back? You want to get yourself settled somewhere?
No.
Okay.
No, it's gone.
Okay.
He's gone, but he came right by my hood. So
I understand. I've done radio interviews on from the wheel of the car, too. It's not always the smartest thing to do.
Getting it on live radio or live car cam or car mic. But anyway, it's the defense, I think. If you're going to say, all right, let's say LeBron were to have 30 triple-doubles and they only had a 55% winning clip with him doing the triple doubles. It would be because of the defense, of the lousy defense that this team has, and that's that's what it is. I think Oklahoma City is better equipped defensively than the Cavs are, and that's probably why their record is better with Westbrook's triple doubles than maybe LeBron with the Cavs.
Last thing, and this is making the case for somebody other than Russell Westbrook to win this award this year. James Harden said, and you probably heard the comments a couple of days ago, he said, you know, I thought wins were what mattered more. You know, he said, I've got eight more wins here. We've got eight more wins here in Houston, and very, very similar numbers. They're within 2 points of one another in scoring. James Harden actually averages almost 2 assists more a game. He's around 11.8 to Russell Westbrook's 10, and Russell has him by 2 rebounds, 10 to 8 or 10.5 to 8. And he said, doesn't the wins kind of make the difference here? And I want to know what you think about that, because I've always said that the MVP award should be a player of the year award. It's the player that's had the best year. But if there are two guys with very, very similar stats, and they do have similar stats here, the guy that leads his team to higher heights probably should get that. That, to me, is a strong case for James Harden to get this. How do you take what do you make of that argument on Harden's behalf, that on a team where he doesn't have a big three, you know, he's not playing with the Warriors, the Rockets don't have an appreciably much better roster than the Thunder do, and he's got 8 more wins, third best record in the NBA with very, very similar stats.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm Harden, I'd make that case all day long. I mean, absolutely. If I'm James Harden, okay, you guys like Westbrook, this is why you like him. Well, here's my counter. And so I would have no problem making that case. You can make a strong case for James Harden, just like I think you can make one for LeBron and I guess Kawhi. I'd make the case for Harden. Now, as far as the victories go, I tend to do what you're talking about, look at victories in turn, you know, when you're talking about a tiebreaker. But one way you can eliminate, or not eliminate, but mitigate wins is just look at baseball with Mike Trout. I mean, Mike Trout is clearly the best player in Major League Baseball. He's winning MVPs because he's the best player in baseball, and he's not on a great team, at least one that hasn't been good. You know, it's only made one playoff appearance in 6 years. Maybe they'll be good this year, who knows, but they haven't been good. He won the MVP last year on a bad team. So if you can clearly identify a great player, the best player in the league, I don't think you do hold the player's victory total against him, if you're that good. And I think Westbrook is good enough where even if his victory total comes up short against a couple other guys, he still warrants the award because of how good he is.
Let me throw one more little group of stats at you on behalf of James Harden. And if you can tell...
Are you his agent? Are you Harden's agent?
No, you know I'm not. It's just that I feel the way I feel about the triple-double, as you and I described a couple of minutes ago. And I'm very hesitant to just join the crowd that says, give it to Russell because he got more triple-doubles than anybody in history. And I want to make sure that all stats are being included in this, including the wins we talked about. So to me, I'm kind of pushing back against the automatic triple-double default MVP argument here. Here's something else for James Harden, and I heard this on television today. James Harden has 30 games this season in which he has accounted for 60 points or more, and that is with his own scoring and with his assisting. Russell Westbrook has accounted for 27 such games. Advantage Harden. James Harden has also accounted for 56 points per game for himself and his teammates on average in their 80 games. 56 points per game for himself and his teammates by assist. Westbrook 55. So it's a 1 point plus for Harden. So the little nudge there. And then finally, Harden has a better field goal shooting percentage, a better 3-point shooting percentage, and a better free throw shooting percentage to go along with those 8 more wins. Does that collection of stats in favor of James Harden nudge him over the triple-double magical title that people have kind of put on Russell Westbrook, that the triple-double is the be-all, end-all?
Well, you're doing a great job on the Harden front, and you know, you're almost convincing me to go with Harden if I had a vote. But no, Harden is a strong candidate.
And I'm not trying to bash Westbrook either. You know,
I'm not trying to bash Westbrook either.
I'm just trying to provide something a little more deeper. You know, provide a little more depth than, you know, the hacks out there that are there. He's got the triple double record. It's got to be him. I'm just trying to give the other side of this. So I'm glad to hear you say you would consider Harden based on these things. Go ahead and finish your thought.
Oh, there's no question that Harden deserves to be considered strongly, just like the King. I mean, look at the King's efficiency. When it comes to his ability to put the ball in the basket, his field goal percentage, effective field goal percentage, even though his free throws aren't great. So you can make cases for a handful of guys. The thing about Westbrook, I agree with you that in and of itself, a triple-double can be overrated, especially if it were to come in a loss. But the best case to me for Westbrook is the fact that he averaged a triple-double for a season. That is incredible. It really is. It's right there with Robertson, of course. And what would be interesting is if Russell Westbrook were to average a triple-double in a season, and not just a, you know, a 10-10-10 triple-double either. Yeah. I mean, this is a meaty triple-double. If he's to average one and then doesn't get the MVP, and, you know, 10 years down the road, somebody looks at the numbers and says, wait a minute, this guy was only the second guy in history to average a triple-double for a season, and he didn't win the MVP? How is that possible? So, you know, that to me is where the triple-double is valuable, is the fact that he can say, I've averaged it for a season, and that is historic.
Yeah, and I get all of that. And my only response, again, if I'm doing this because, you know, to make a point, which I am, is that James Harden was 1.9 rebounds away from the same average triple-double. 1.9.
That's a solid point.
And as pointed, because he's over, you know, in assists, too, at 11.5. He's leading the league. So he's over the, you know, the points, which is also very meaty, just 1.3 points a game behind Russell. So they're essentially neck and neck in points. Harden's got him in assists, and he's 1.9 away from a triple-double because he's 8.1. in rebounding as well. And as I said, field percentage, 3-point percentage, free throw percentage, all better. 8 more wins on a similar roster, 30 games accounting for 60 plus points to 27. To me, that is enough to nudge him over the magical title of triple double.
Hey Bob, you know what you're saying? Yeah. What you're saying is if I'm a voter and I vote for James Harden for MVP, I have nothing to apologize for.
Absolutely.
And that's the case.
That is what I'm saying.
Because anyone who votes for Harden has no reason to cower and no reason to say, oh, you know, or no reason to answer to the, oh, how dare you not vote for Russell Westbrook. Well, here's why I voted for James Harden, and you spelled it out. So absolutely he has a legitimate case, and those who vote for him, you know, assuming there are some, I have no reason to apologize.
Absolutely correct. That is exactly what I'm saying. There would be no shame in it whatsoever. I could make just as strong, if not maybe a slightly stronger case for Harden than anybody could make for Russell Westbrook, with the exception of the, but it was a triple-double average for the whole season and nobody's ever done it before. You take that magical moniker away and you have a guy who has had a better season, I think, in Houston. Really, really great conversation, D-Man. Drive safely, my friend, and I mean that with all sincerity. I appreciate it.
I got to my destination without any incident, so thanks, Bob.
thank you, buddy. Appreciate it. There's Dennis Mandeloff joining us out of Cleveland, talking a lot about the NBA. And you know what's more fun than just watching the NBA? Watching the NBA knowing that you have players in your lineup in a contest at FanDuel playing FanDuel's daily NBA or daily basketball, daily fantasy basketball. It is so much more fun when you're playing fantasy sports on FanDuel. By the way, have you tried fantasy golf yet? So much fun. Just choose your team of golfers, watch them card birdies and pars and eagles and more, and win cash as you play. There's something for everybody. So many contests starting at just $1. Hurry up and submit your lineup before tee off on Thursday morning, and you are in for that week's PGA Tour event. And then I mentioned daily fantasy basketball. How much fun is it if you pick Harden and your buddy picks Westbrook and they're going toe-to-toe on a night-by-night basis, not only for supremacy in the NBA and the MVP, but for cash prizes for you? Daily fantasy baseball the same way. New contests are going every day. Play as often or as little as you want. Play in the big tournaments or just in tournaments against your friends. It is so much fun. Play some fantasy sports. Win some money like over 2.5 million players have done on FanDuel.com. Winning cash prizes playing fantasy sports. Here's how you get started. You, if you are a new user, are going to get FanDuel's Combo 5-Pack valued at up to $50 for free. That's right, $50 in five free entries to a combination of 50-50 beginner contests is yours. Just finish in the top half of the 50-50 contest to win cash. To get those five free entries, go to FanDuel.com, click the Join Now button, and enter the promo code FRANCE. You got to spell it right to get the money. FRANTZ. FRANTZ is how you spell France. That's at FanDuel.com, promo code France, void where prohibited. Right back to wrap it up after this.
Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Back indeed and wrapping it up. Just a couple more minutes with you right here on the Extravaganza. Thanks for being a part of it. Hey, I want to do something fun for you and cool for you just to thank you for listening and staying with me right to the end of the show. I mentioned Toledo Walleye playoff tickets. I do have a pair of them for you coming up for this Friday's Game 1 at the Huntington Center against Kalamazoo. If you want to go see the Walleye, we've got you covered. If you are caller number 5 right now to 866-240-1065, 866-240-1065. Dial now, caller 5. Frank will take your call, and we'll set you up for the Walleye and Kalamazoo coming up on Friday at Huntington Center. I've got two more pairs of those, by the way, which I'll give away tomorrow and Wednesday right here on the Extravaganza. So I put the poll question out there early in the show, the same thing that I just debated and discussed with Dennis Manilov. And that poll question, of course, was should Russell Westbrook be automatically declared the MVP because of the triple-double stat? In my personal opinion, again, I just don't think the triple-double should be the automatic, you know, be-all, end-all conversation ender. So I've got the question up there. Did Russell Westbrook seal the deal with his 50-point trip-dub? I'm just 140-character abbreviating. An NBA record 42nd. Or do wins matter more for guys with similar stats? Vote now. 67% of you have said, yes, Russell Westbrook is the guy. 17% have said James Harden. Nobody has voted for Kawhi Leonard thus far, and 16% of the responses have gone to LeBron James. So those are your only four choices there. It's LeBron James, it is James Harden, it is Kawhi Leonard, and it is Russell Westbrook. So keep those going maybe after the show ends, and we'll kind of keep checking back in and try to comment. I try when I can to keep the conversation going, by the way, whenever the show ends. You know, I'll stay on Twitter a little bit with you. Our Twitter handle is SportsRadio1065. If you're not there, you should be. SportsRadio1065. I try to keep that conversation going whenever I can, even when the show ends or later on at night, I'll check back in. So if you've got a message or a question or a comment or something like that, hate mail or a compliment, doesn't matter. Hit me up at SportsRadio1065, and we'll check it out and stay in conversation. Finally, I want to wrap it up today by saying, and I didn't get a chance to get in-depth into this, but I want to say happy trails to, and that's a PTI ripoff to say happy trails, but I don't know how else to say farewell to, Anthony Johnson, MMA fighter and one of the more beloved MMA fighters in UFC, who retired Saturday night after his loss to Daniel Cormier. I said this earlier in the program. Anthony Johnson gave a very heartfelt, almost tearful farewell speech after losing that fight, saying that it is going to be his last fight, and he's not quitting now because he lost the match to Cormier. He's retiring from fighting, he said, and he planned it going into this event, that this would be his last fight, because he said getting punched in the head and rolling around with guys in dangerous ways is just not fun. This is a guy who's one of the baddest mamma jammas on the planet, as virtually every MMA superstar fighter is. I mean, a guy could just take you apart in so many different ways with their bare hands or their feet or whatever the case might be. He said, this is just not fun. And you know what? I'm really surprised more people haven't said this. I'm going to tie it in very briefly with what some NFL players have said. Former Pro Bowl tight end Jordan Cameron said this when he retired from the Dolphins just about 3 weeks ago. He said that, I don't love football because it's so painful. And he said, I can tell you this, there are a lot of other guys in the league that don't have fun playing football. They do it just because it's their career. It's not fun playing in that kind of pain. I want to evaluate that and examine that and discuss that on tomorrow's show. This is the second guy in a contact sport saying, this isn't fun, and I'm walking away from it, even though it makes me a ton of money, because it's just not fun doing these things. What kind of person even starts a career like MMA? Football's a little different in that regard. Boxing a little less so as well. But particularly in MMA, that's something I'd like to examine tomorrow. That's a great story. In fact, I'll tweet a link out when I'm done here, when I sign off. I'll tweet a link to that story out of Anthony Johnson, and maybe we can kind of catch up on that tomorrow as well. But follow us on Twitter at Sports Radio 106.5. All right, Drive Time with Mr. Miller is coming up next, so stay where you are. Thanks for being a part of the extravaganza today. We'll see you tomorrow.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.